Greetings from BBS Radio, where truth and news still exist in the original form. You're tuned in to The Spiritual Politician, the show that shows you where politics, government, and selfishness went wrong and how you can take action to make it right. I'm Melinda Pillsbury Foster, your host for this hour of insight aimed at making each of us more responsible, more of cooperative, and more aware of the spiritual bonds that connect us to each other, no matter what we find to squabble over in the interim. Now, you can call us toll-free from the U.S. to 877-876-5227. You can call from Canada to 888-810-8322. Or you can call direct to 530-876-3222. This show is carried online, and you may also be able to get it on the air in your local area. Find out if one of those old-fashioned on-the-air stations in your area carries this show, just contact us at bbsradio.com. The website for the show can be found on the BBS Radio site and at spiritualpolitician.blogspot.com. All past shows become available as soon as is humanly or even extra-humanly possible on the station archives. And now, my personal blog is located at howtheneoconsstolefreedom.blogspot.com. Bet you can't figure out what it's about, right? The article up at the top on my blog this week is about Hugo Chavez and the definitions still used to control what we think here in the United States. Words like socialist evidently are capable of turning off the function of the brain, and so are very useful to the neocons. Now, I wouldn't know Hugo Chavez if he came to my front door selling vacuum cleaners. But when there is that much virulence directed at someone, my ears prick up. The establishment of neocons doesn't like old Hugo, that is clear. I understand how these people work. They're not nice, not any of them. And the busybodyism you see from oil companies directed toward anyone who happens to occupy land over those luscious reservoirs of oil are, well, nothing but obscene. I have said before, and I will say again, that Chavez should be well served to take out invasion or coup d'etat insurance from Lloyd's of London. We all know how inventive Karl Rove is, and they might well decide it would be a good thing to start a Catholic El Carumba chapter down there or up here and invite the credulous into play. Chavez had better watch his back, in other words. Give the blog a read. I think you'll enjoy it. I thought that last week a lot had happened, but this week got busier for presidential politics. Ron Paul did smackdown on Rudy Giuliani on the issue of 9/11 at the Republican Forum in South Carolina. That's not what the mainstream media wants you to think, but that's really what happens. The truth hurts, doesn't it, Rudy? Old Rudy evidently has not been following the train of events on American foreign policy for the last many years. Paul has, and told him about blowback, a term Rudy probably thought was sexual, but is understood in the community actually conversant with the cause and effect of war and peace and oil in the Mideast to mean something entirely different. Actually, if you know anything about the Hatfields and the McCoys, you don't need to study anything with a more complex vocabulary. People don't like being attacked, and if they are, they'll do something about it. Now, the huffy mainstream on the grid Republican types, for instance, the chairman of the GOP in Michigan, got so angry they wanted to exclude Ron Paul for his candor and for disagreeing with that August presence in the White House. So here's a quote from an article that came out yesterday. The chairman of the Michigan Republican Party said Wednesday he will try to bar presidential candidate Ron Paul from future GOP debates because of the remarks the Texas congressman made that suggest the September 11 attacks were the fault of U.S. foreign policy. Michigan Party Chairman Saul Aneza said that he will circulate a petition among Republican National Committee members to bar Paul from other debates. At a GOP candidate's debate Tuesday night, Paul drew attacks from all sides, most forcibly from former New York Governor Rudy Giuliani, when he linked the terror attacks to U.S. bombings. Quote, "Have you ever read about the reasons they attacked us? They attack us because we've been over there. We've been bombing Iraq for 10 years, unquote, Paul said. And News has called the comments, quote, off the wall and out of whack, unquote. I think he should have left much, he wished he would have felt much more comfortable on the stage with the Democrats in what he said last night. And I think that he's a distraction in the Republican primary and does not represent the base, and he does not represent the party, and News has said during an RNC state leadership meeting in Columbia, South Carolina. Given what he said last night, it was just so off the wall and out of whack that I think it was more detrimental than helpful, and News has said. And News has said his petition would go to debate sponsors and broadcasters to discourage inviting Paul. So that's what he said. Today, Anuzis withdrew his statement after being flooded with letters from Paul's supporters. They tied up the phone lines, too. It's obvious to all and sundry that none of the Republican candidates want to compete with the congressman from Texas. Understandable. Hard to sell lies when someone's selling the truth we all need to hear, huh? There are Ron Paul sites multiplying on the web like cockroaches. If you want to see what's going on, just give it a Google. Ron's a nice guy through and through, but he had better watch what he ingests. Many people are obviously very threatened by what he is saying. President Paul. Has a nice ring to it, doesn't it? Getting Paul the Republican nomination is a campaign that has now been taken up by grassroots people all across the country. The national coordinator for that campaign is Linda Honeycutt of North Carolina. You can find her through her website, grannywarriors.com. And now our thought for the week ahead. Things are happening in all directions, and one of those things is the continued thumb-fingered attempts by the theocons to take over America. While I was doing research for this show, that took on an eerie direction. If you're a participant in what we refer to as the freedom movement, you're probably aware of the work of Robert Heinlein. He wrote science fiction. Heinlein was a prolific writer, and over the 50s and the 60s, a sub rosa war was fought out between him and the voice of individualism and the central government work of Isaac Asimov. It was a ferocious battle, but Asimov lost. Today, science fiction, and this is now mainstreaming, is dominated by the philosophy of individualism. Books written by Heinlein include The Moon is a Harsh Mistress, which tells the story of how a small group of people, three of them plus one computer, ran a revolution on the moon. It's a great read, and I included it in the reading list when I was a libertarian activist many, many years ago. Another one of Heinlein's books, Revolt in 2100, tells the story of how the people free America after it is taken over by a theocratic state. The man elected president who finished that conversion to theocracy was named Nehemiah Scudder, a backwoods preacher turned president, elected in 2012, eerie. Then he was a dictator. No elections were held after 2016. When I first read the book back in the 60s, I thought there was no possibility that this could happen, but the book outlines how it was done. Rereading the book today is, well, creepy. One thing that Scudder did was rewrite American history to facilitate his takeover. If you look at what has happened today, you will see that the theocons have taken a page out of the Heinlein book. Their prime historian, David Barton, even named his organization Wall Builders from the book of Nehemiah found in the Bible. One must ask themselves, why an organization supposedly intended to open humanity up to the truth of salvation would choose the name Wall Builders? In the Heinlein book, Revolt in 2100, the theocratic state built a wall of disinformation and laws that kept Americans from knowing what was going on in other parts of the world. There was complete, rigid, top-down control of the flow of information. That also struck me as prophetic when I thought about it. Our guest today is going to talk about the first prophet of Theocon America, David Barton, and the book she wrote that refutes point by point his lies, and how you can arm yourself with the truth we all need so desperately today. Chris Rada was in the printing and advertising industry for 20 years, typesetting, developing websites, working with multimedia from customers ranging from small mom-and-pop operations to large mega-corporations when her life changed. She found a cause that became her career. She'll be telling us about that career change this evening. Please welcome Chris Rada. Chris, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Well, I'm so glad that you could be with us this evening to share the exciting adventure of this book that you have written and your life and the changes in it. And we always start our program by asking for some just little personal things about our guest, like the name of your dog and your favorite restaurant and that sort of thing. So how about sharing?
Okay, my dog, who I'm trying to push off my couch at the moment as we speak so I can sit down, is Grizzle. And he's actually named after one of Thomas Jefferson's dogs. And just came across the name in a odd letter from Jefferson when I was doing my research and said, well, the next dog I get is going to be named Grizzle. And right now
that's a very interesting name for a dog.
And it doesn't fit this dog at all because the word means, you know, speckledy or whatever, and this dog's black, but nobody knows what the word means, so that's his name. My dog, and what else do you want to know?
Well, tell us about your favorite kind of food, your favorite restaurant,
your favorite movie. Wow. Favorite kind of food is probably pizza.
Well, we can all love that.
My favorite movie is The History of the World, Part 1.
How prophetic.
I don't know if it's prophetic or just that it's a really funny movie. Let's see. Favorite author, Jack Finney, who wrote a lot of parallel history books about what would have happened if one thing had gone differently. That's about it. Not a very exciting person.
Oh, I think that you're pretty exciting. Yeah, and you certainly have written a very exciting book. Tell us a little bit more about how you happened to come to write the book, because it's a really fascinating story.
Well, it was sort of by accident. Back about, I guess it was 4 years ago, whenever the big Roy Moore Ten Commandments rock was in the news, I just sat down at my computer one day, just normal day, sitting down to work, had a couple minutes to kill, and clicked on a link to a message board from an AOL story about Roy Moore. Mm-hmm. And started reading some of the history, I use the word loosely, that was being used to defend these Ten Commandments monuments. And at the same time, there was a couple other big stories in the news. I think the gay marriage amendment debate was real hot, and the one of the Pledge of Allegiance cases. And I started getting more involved in these message boards, and at first just posting little short rebuttals to things. And when those were disputed by folks on the other side, I started, you know, doing a little more looking up things. And, you know, I'd always been interested in history my whole life, and a lot of what I was seeing was obviously not good history. And things just progressed to longer and longer posts on message boards with footnotes and all sorts of stuff, and then people emailing me with history questions when they were seeing them on in other places. You know, is this quote true? Is that right? Where can I find this? And suddenly, within a few months, I was spending probably 3 or 4 hours a day either writing posts for message boards or answering history questions. Mm-hmm. And that led to a few people on these message boards saying, well, why don't you write a book? And I had never written anything before in my life, and the idea struck me as sort of crazy. And I actually, you know, figured someone else had already written such a book, but when I looked, I really couldn't find a book that just directly addressed the history lies without getting into the subject of religion or even the religious beliefs of the founders, but just strictly the history lies refuted point by point in detail.
Mm-hmm.
And thought I was going to write a book, you know, take a few months, a couple hundred pages, and ended up, once I started researching, finding there was more than I had ever imagined. And the first volume, the book that's out now, that it's about 500 pages, and that's only volume one. There will be three volumes.
Wow, so you're writing three tomes.
Yeah. So, and it's because I found so many lies, and also that how far back some of the lies go, tracing the history of the lies themselves, because this isn't the first time that this sort of movement has gotten strong, where the lies were being created and used for various political reasons.
Were you surprised when you started seeing this?
Well,
when you're realizing how long it had been going on?
Well, yeah, and how that came about was that I initially got the popular religious right history books like David Barton, William Federer, the authors that, you know, are popular now. And then when I started checking their footnotes, that led me to a batch of books from like the late 1940s, like right after the Everson case. There were a couple books where some of these lies appeared, and these are the books that the newer books were citing. Those books led me back to other books and traced some of these lies all the way back as far as the 1820s, when the big debate was over, like, Sunday mail delivery and things like that. So it ended up being the book took a different turn, and the stories were just so interesting that I decided just to include them all, and that's why I'm going to have 300-500
pages. And that's why it's going to be longer. That's actually, I think, what happened to Lysander Spooner. You know, he wrote a compendium of all the arguments about abolition that turned into sort of a Bible for that.
Well, I tell you, that's the subject Barton's getting into now. I haven't looked at his materials about slavery and abolition and everything yet, because it's going to be volume three in my book that gets into that time period. Mm-hmm. But I'm assuming from his other writings that I'll be finding some falsehoods in them. So
where is he going with that? That's fascinating. Just tell us, where is he going with that book? Is he going to decide that blacks shouldn't ever have been free?
No. He's trying to build support for the Republican Party among blacks. I mean, that's his whole... He was actually hired by the GOP to travel the country campaigning in 2004.
Aha.
He's the 2005 Time Magazine list of the 25 most powerful evangelicals, which can easily be found on the internet, it describes his political power and actually says, you know, there's the congressman that he helped put into office. I mean, he was the vice chair of the Texas Republican Party for a number of years also. So he's not just writing books that are being used in homeschools and this and that. He has real clout, among politicians, and is effective at campaigning for them using the false American history.
And that's you said at one point earlier when we were talking that actually he his books are now being referenced by Republican congressmen for the most part, standing up in Congress and making arguments. So you can see how these ideas have percolated in and are simply distorting the entire process.
Yeah, there's one congressman, something I didn't tell you when I spoke to you before, was that there was one congressman that actually introduced a resolution to honor David Barton for his work in American history. And and how I found that was I'm actually doing a study of the use of historical lies and misconceptions on the floor of, you know, Congress and the Senate in First Amendment debates over the last decade, and I had initially done this just for my own use. About 2 years ago, I was going to put a thing on my website, where people can click on their states and see if their congressmen are guilty of using any of these lies, and then email their congressman with some nice message. And I just kind of put it aside. And didn't think that it was just something I was going to use in the future. It was interesting. I didn't think of it as a big deal. And then in the course of a conversation with Bruce Wilson, one of the co-founders of Talk to Action, which is the blog I write on, I mentioned it to him when we were talking about something else, and he saw it as something much more important than what I had as far as being very useful, and I'm in the process now of updating it to include the very last Congress, and also writing it up more formally as a study. And what I found so far is that, I mean, many, many instances, not just from Barton, but just the lies that have been around from even before Barton, that in every single case, it was Republicans using them, except one senator that's a Democrat.
Mm-hmm. And what's the name of the senator?
Senator Byrd.
Okay, well, that makes sense, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, I mean, I wasn't surprised to see that, you know, but just the frequency of the use of them is what was the most disturbing, you know, whichever party they're coming from. But what in a very objective study, and I was just studying keywords that I know would appear in any version of any of the popularly used lies. And then not going by person or by party or anything. And so within the next few months, I should be getting that together, and we'll make it available.
Well, that's going to be exciting. I can think of a lot of ways we could use that to make people unhappy.
Yeah.
And, of course, those are people who need to be made unhappy.
Yeah. Well, David Barton gives tours of the Capitol that are... you know, they have to be, I guess, sponsored by a congressman. A congressman has to accompany these tours, and he does there are these tours for, like, pastors and school groups and stuff. So he has that kind of access to be able to give, like, private three-hour tours at night of the Capitol.
Aha.
Yeah,
and
which...
you said that he had a sort of interesting garb that he assumed on those occasions.
Yeah, he's always... whenever you see him, like, anywhere, he's wearing, his shirt is always some version of the American flag. And from what I gather, he does his tours of the Capitol barefoot. Now, I don't know that for sure, but I've read it several places and thought it sounded a bit odd. And,
sounds odd to me.
Why someone would make that up if it wasn't true? That's why I'm assuming it's true, because it would be a very, very unusual thing for someone to... even think of to make up.
Well, and you can't imagine why they would make up something that would not be so strange. I
assume
the people you were reading were people who were supporters of his.
Yes, they were. They were people, you know, cause just talking about how cool and interesting he is and everything, and, you know, a barefoot tour of the Capitol makes him seem more credible to them for some reason. But, yeah, I thought it was pretty strange.
It is very strange. But then we have to consider the source. And somebody who would decide they were going to falsify history so that they could carry out what is, you know, essentially a takeover of the United States would have to be a little bit odd from any perspective.
Well, yeah. Yeah. And, his lies are now getting into the public schools. Because before, when they were only in home schools and even... like Christian high schools and stuff, there's not little the public can do about that. I mean, parents can tell their kids the sky is green. They shouldn't, but you can't do anything about it. But now his lies are getting into the public schools through this National Council on Bible Curriculum course, which, according to them, is now in 382 school districts in 38 states.
Oh, my gosh.
One of the members of their advisory board is none other than David Barton.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And here's where it gets interesting, is that Barton, back in the mid-90s, after it actually began with Rush Limbaugh using a Barton quote and getting called on it, and then they kind of made up a source for it or whatever. But it, the result of all this was criticism of Barton, and he ended up putting out what he calls his unconfirmed quotations list, and and telling everyone he was just, he didn't do it because of the controversy. He did it because he just all of a sudden tried, you know, wanted to have a higher academic standard than most, you know, of the academic community, like just, you know, bunch of bull.
Right.
But on this, this list of unconfirmed quotations, how I stumbled across the problems with the Bible curriculum was that one of them is used on the National Council for Bible Curriculum in Public Schools website, along with a few other untruths. So then I started looking into it a little more and went to try to get a copy of this curriculum and found out that, well, you can't. Their ordering process is more like a screening process. Now, this isn't public school
That's
curriculum.
That's bizarre. I mean, you should be able to get any kind of curriculum to take it before your kids are going to see it.
Right. Well,
what about members of the school boards? Can they?
Well, they have a, their ordering process. They first send out a packet of information to a parent who wants to get this into their school district, and then of what to say, and then they are instructed. Then when they get the packet, they're supposed to call the organization for further instructions.
Then they
propose this to their school board. So by the time anyone sees the actual curriculum, the process is well underway, and anyone who was not trying to get it for the purpose of actually wanting it in their school system would probably have just considered it too much trouble. So it's more like a vetting screening process than an ordering process. But I was able to obtain a copy from somebody. And
somehow I thought that you probably would have, given your propensity to go get it.
So the curriculum had already been revised one time because the Texas Freedom Network, there's a report on their website, actually, that's done by a professor at Southern Methodist University, Mark Chancey. He went after, as far as the proselytizing aspect and other aspects of plagiarism, different things that he pointed out in his report. Now, he was covering the whole gamut of things that were wrong with it and mentioned the fact, briefly, the stuff about using Barton's history materials, which are recommended in the curriculum as well as quoted. And that forced them to have to revise the curriculum a couple years ago. They did not change the American history section. Well, they changed it, but not in any way that made it better. Okay, right. So I got it, got the curriculum specifically to look at the American history and wrote a series of articles very in-depth in a similar format that I wrote my book in, where I take the lie, break it down, explain it, on Talk to Action. There's like about an eight-part series I did on it. And
the way you organize the book is fascinating because it makes it, it's just like boom, boom, boom. You lay it out and there it is.
Yeah,
I love that.
Well, yeah, I tried to do it as simple as possible where, you know, by use of typefaces, being a typesetter, that the lie is in bold, real quotes are in a different font, my commentary is in another font. So it's very clear what are the lies, what are the, you know, and where you look at some of the religious right history books, and they're put together so haphazardly that they're, on top of being untrue, they're confusing, which I, you know, you know, it doesn't stop people from quoting them and stuff. I mean, it's just another odd thing about them, and shows the lack of scholarship and lack of really wanting to teach American history.
Mm-hmm. Well, of course, it isn't really intending to teach American history. It's propaganda.
Yeah. And you get a lot of stories that are like, Actually, I just came across something that's not in my book, but Barton also has a, in October, launched a daily radio show on Sirius, and I think it's also on some traditional kind of radio stations also, but it's called Wall Builders Live. And, like, just as an example, I'm listening to today's show and to get material for my future articles about him.
Yeah.
And which I do every day. He goes, even when things are true, they turn them into lies. He's talking about Patrick Henry. And now, everyone knows, nobody doubts, nobody questions that Patrick Henry was a Christian. Patrick Henry wanted religious taxes in Virginia, but Patrick Henry lost that fight. But he's quoted often by these history revisionists because he did make a lot of statements about Christianity. But their books teach so little about actual history that the audience of these books doesn't know one founder from another as far as what they did and you know, who Patrick Henry was in the other than, you know, during the Revolutionary War, but what his politics were, what his, you know, the rest of his career. And Barton goes, well, someone accused Patrick Henry of being a deist, and Patrick Henry thundered, and then goes on to give this quote. So look up the quote. The quote's in a letter Patrick Henry wrote to his daughter.
How did he
so even but that's the like, even when they're quoting a real quote, it's a lie. And you know, that's not even getting to the stuff that is actual out and out lies. It's
how bizarre.
It's like, you know, there's liars for Jesus and there's the compulsive liars for Jesus. Because, like, you see, he even has to lie about this, and he did.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But, like, yeah, it's, but most of the time when they do that with partially true stories, it's to involve someone like Thomas Jefferson more who wasn't really involved, or to for a purpose that really does enhance the lie. And sometimes it's just, you know, like this thundering when the thing was in a letter. Sometimes it's just, you don't know why they did it. But, you know, it's just mind-boggling.
They just did it. Now, you have the chapters on your Bible are, 1, Congress and the Bible, 2, the Northwest Ordinance, 3, Indian treaties and Indian schools, propagating the gospel among the heathen, Thomas Jefferson in public education, did prayer save the Constitutional Convention, treaties with the Barbary States, treaties with Christian nations, James Madison's detached memoranda, the election of 1800, more lies about Benjamin Franklin, more lies about Thomas Jefferson, Jefferson, Madison, and Blackstone. Now, this is a fascinating list, and recently I know that all of us have heard stories, and there must be, we don't have enough time to cover them all. There is so much.
I'm just actually pulling
which
out a copy
one,
of the book here. Let's see.
Which ones are your favorites? Which ones
well,
have surprised you the most?
Let's see. Tough call. Well, first of all, let people know that the entire Northwest Ordinance chapter is available as a free download on my website, which is www.liarsforjesus.com. Now, that's the reason I put that, chose that as the free chapter, was because that's such a common lie, and actually was one of the ones used by David Barton to promote the National Council on Bible curriculum in on his Wall Builders Live radio show. And his lie about that is that the Northwest Ordinance required, not just promoted or encouraged, but required religion in public education, which is completely untrue. Now, it's a long story to get into, so I won't get into the whole thing, but through a series of misquoting state constitutions and various things, Barton brings his audience to that conclusion. But the thing that is a bit different about my book is I don't just get into, well, it was the Continental Congress, so it didn't matter, this and that. In my research, what I found was that the statement in the Northwest Ordinance that includes both religion and public schools, which is a statement that really doesn't mean anything, was never used. The very first state admitted under the Northwest Ordinance, Ohio, the new Congress, now that we're into 1802 or whatever, substituted a different education provision for Ohio, which granted them land for public schools in lieu of what was in the Northwest Ordinance, which really gave them nothing. It was just a statement that was just didn't really mean anything.
They really valued education, but they certainly didn't put aside any land for churches.
Well, no, actually, this is even better. The original land ordinance, which was replaced by the Northwest Ordinance, was because of the Ohio Company of Associates, which was buying large sections of land from the Continental Congress, which they desperately needed to sell to pay off the debts from the Revolutionary War. The education provision and also the anti-slavery provision and all that was the work of a Reverend Cutler, who was one of the founders of the Ohio Company.
Mm-hmm.
And what they wanted was a new ordinance that suited their purposes better. And that's how the Northwest Ordinance came about. There already was a land ordinance which Thomas Jefferson had drafted, which mentioned nothing about like education or religion. It was strictly a land ordinance.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, but that one people can download if they, it's a very long, complicated story. So that one can be downloaded and read, you know, right on my website. But some of the others, I'll give you an example from Thomas Jefferson and public education. One of the lies used by D. James Kennedy and a few others is that Thomas Jefferson wanted to bring the Geneva Academy, which was the school founded by Calvin in Geneva in like the 1500s or whenever, over to the United States as a theological seminary.
Mm-hmm.
How they get that lie is that Thomas Jefferson really did want to bring the Geneva Academy over, but by that time, the late 1700s, the Geneva Academy was a science academy. It was no longer a theological academy. Okay?
Which makes so perfect sense, given.
Well, I'll read before it's in D. James Kennedy's book. This is in his book, What If America Were a Christian Nation Again, is the title of his book. Says Jefferson wanted to bring the entire faculty of Calvin's Theological Seminary over from Geneva, Switzerland, and establish them at the University of Virginia. Now, first of all, D. James Kennedy is copying this lie from Mark Belial's, another revisionist, and D. James Kennedy is, like, I guess, just too dumb to even get the lies right. And the University of Virginia didn't even exist yet. He just didn't even know what Belial's was lying about when he copied the lie. But Jefferson's proposal to move the Geneva Academy over was a proposal because of the political upheaval in Geneva right after, you know, the French Revolution and everything. Somebody who was in political exile that Jefferson knew from when he was a foreign minister in France wrote to him saying that he wanted to relocate this science faculty to America because he thought the Geneva Academy was in danger and was going to go under. So that's what. But the story in the religious right history books is that Jefferson wanted to bring over a theological seminary.
Mm-hmm. Well, and given that it was Jefferson, it would be much more likely that it would be scientific.
Right, but the people reading D. James Kennedy books are saying, well, yes, it was Calvin's Theological Seminary originally. And the people that read the religious right history books are not going to question these things. That's the real problem. You know, they're going to read that, they're going to believe it. They're not going to look and see, do any research and see that, well, you know, by the late 1700s, this was a science school.
Yes.
you know,
because
the problem
not going to do that.
Right, exactly. And, you know, I mean, there's minor lies like that, and then there's the ones that are more important at the moment are the ones that are being used for specific purposes now. Now, the Northwest Ordinance one definitely is, because that's being used to promote the Bible curriculum, which is a very real problem, you know, right at the moment. And there's another one about Jefferson promising financial aid to Ursuline nuns in New Orleans or something like that, where that is used by the faith-based initiatives crowd. Okay? And that also, without an explanation of Jefferson's letter to these nuns, he was not promising them financial help. He was, you know, ensuring them of their religious liberties and property rights. But the letter is, you know, it's used by the faith-based initiative crowd. And there's a myth about a particular pastor in the Revolutionary War ripping off his pastor's robes to reveal the army uniform underneath. And now this one's being used by the crowd that wants ministers to be able to not have to adhere to the 501c3, not the political speech in churches and all that stuff. This is one of their things now, this story, which also is not true, but there is a statue of it in the Capitol building of this myth. So a lot of the lies now are being used for very specific causes.
That's fascinating. What kind of response have you gotten from the public when they read your book or they encounter your site?
You know, I haven't heard anything bad. This is the odd thing. You know, I've been at this since February, really, when the book's been out since August, but nobody knew about it except for a very few people. I really started becoming, you know, noticed in February when I started writing on a blog. And I cannot find a single right-wing or Christian website saying anything about me.
What that would be is they are ignoring you, because if you can't respond to it, then you simply ignore it, and you're hoping that will extinguish it.
Right.
Maybe if I ignore it, it'll go away.
Right. I mean, I'm writing is being quoted and linked to by, you know, the rest of the blogosphere, but nothing. I mean, it's astounding. I was expecting some sort of backlash by now, but apparently, you know, they can't find anything to use, which I guess is a good thing.
Well, it is a good thing, but of course it raises the question of, because these people are never actually without a response, you always have to ask yourself, now, what are they going to do? Because they will do something, rest assured.
Right. And they did actually challenge David Barton somewhat. I had written I don't know how many weeks in a row, pummeling him and the Bible curriculum, and with very detailed rebuttals of his lies, with, you know, well-documented and everything. And then he actually, he started his radio show back in October. The I think third show was Elizabeth Ridenour, who heads the National Council on Bible Curriculum. In that show, he used two lies, the Northwest Ordinance thing and the one about a Bible, that the lie is that it was printed by Congress for the use of schools, which that's covered in my book. It wasn't. But that's one of the lies he used. So he aired that show. He re-aired it in January, same show. In March, I wrote a rebuttal of the lie about this Bible being printed by Congress and everything, and it's been copied onto a lot of other websites. It's out and around. I can't imagine that he hasn't seen it or heard about it.
And at no point has he really responded.
No, well, on last Friday, he aired that show about the National Council on Bible Curriculum for a third time, the exact same show, a repeat. So that night I posted on Talk to Action for people to email him the link to the story where I rebutted the lies he used on that radio show and told people to put in their emails that I challenged him to rebut anything in that article that I wrote or any of the other articles on Talk to Action, and no response. So I don't know if, you know, I'm assuming that at least a few people from, you know, reading that must have emailed him. Well, I know a few that have that told me they did, but so he can't say he doesn't know about it, because that's how he, you know.
Okay, let's look at this for a moment, though, because this gets into the strategic issue for him. He has a huge readership. Mm-hmm. One of the interesting things that's happened in America is that we've been bifurcated, so that the people who are reading your material and using it, linking to it, and posting to it are becoming educated about what's really going on. But the people who you'd think of as his constituency, his readership, never are aware of it because these groups don't talk.
Right.
And that is going to increase the division in America. And the way to handle that is to figure out ways to get into his arena.
Right. And one of them that one plan we have is that everyone who's been fighting the Bible curriculum, and now just to make it clear, this is specifically the National Council on Bible Curriculum. There's another, the Bible Literacy Project, which mm-hmm. doesn't appear to be as bad. I haven't looked at it much yet, and so I'm not talking about all Bible curriculums, Bible being taught as literature curriculums. I'm talking specifically about this one. Everyone, you know, the first thought is to fight it on separation of church and state grounds, and there's a case pending going on now in Texas over it, and also to, you know, approach school boards and stuff. What we want to do is mobilize history teachers
mm-hmm.
within the school districts where this curriculum is being taught or has been proposed, because this course most likely in the school districts it's being taught and is being taught as an English elective. English mm-hmm. teachers may not recognize that the history, American history, is not accurate. So what we want to do, and we're just sort of working on how to do this, and one way is if anybody knows that the curriculum is in your school district, or even call your own school district. You have a right, being in that district, to ask if this curriculum is in your school. If you find out that it is or if it's being considered, email me the name of the school district at liarsforjesus@aol.com.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to get a list together of, because the list is private, the list of school districts, and there are 382 of them. So we need to somehow, in various ways, get the list together and then
mm-hmm.
Print up what I've written, the series of articles, into a pamphlet, booklet, more, you know, presented a little bit differently, same historical information, and do a mailing out to history teachers.
Have you thought about doing direct contact to churches?
The minister that wrote the foreword for my book, he right now is a friend of his that wants to develop a study guide for it. And work with, like, we've got a few ideas in that direction. We're just right now at the stage of developing ideas. Okay, we have the material, we have the, you know, we need to find the ways to use it. We've got a lot of ideas, plans at different stages of development, and we're just going to attack this from a lot of different directions.
Mm-hmm. That's going to be fascinating to see how they eventually respond, because you've really kind of caught them with their pants down.
Yeah.
So so to speak.
Well, you know, I've told you before, I actually would welcome a lawsuit because I really pushed the envelope as far as how much of what's in their books, the religious right books, I actually quote in my book in order to show the lies, because some of them are very subtle, that by changing one word, it changes the meaning of something. So I really needed to present the lie exactly as it's presented in the book, if it's something that implies something, so people get that they need to read how it's actually presented in these books. So in order to do that, I really had to push it as far as like fair use. And you know, a few people said, well, you might get sued by one of these authors. And I was like, I want to, because that would force them to have to defend what they wrote, which is indefensible. So I don't think that's likely to happen.
But it sounds like there's quite a group of people. There's quite a group of people who are excited about what you've done. They see how it's going to be used as a weapon to reestablish what the truth of America's founding was, and that they're going to be kind of going forward with you to make that happen.
Interest from, like, you know, so many groups. There's so many aspects of what the religious right is doing, but one of the things that is absolutely necessary to all of the things that they're doing is having masses of people think that their agenda is justified by history.
Mm-hmm.
Remove that, and you cut them off at the knees, because a lot of those people then might say, well, you know, we don't like it, but that bill or that law really, you know, isn't justified by history. So they need the people to get the support for their agenda, you know. So that's it's a very important building block of all. That's why the book has brought interest from people that are working on all different areas of things that the religious right are doing. It's a common tool used in all of them.
Uh-huh. Yes, it's just amazing. I mean, you really provided the tool that we all desperately needed at exactly the time that we needed it. Could you please give people your website again so they can go see it and tell them about Talk to Action?
Oh, yeah, sure. My website is www.liarsforjesus.com, and the blog is Talk to Action, but the word two is the number two, so it's Talk, the number two, action.org.
And that's going to be exciting. I hope you get a lot of people coming out to help and to read the book and read your articles, which are just truly amazing and useful. And I want to thank you so much for being with us today and sharing what you are doing in the battle for America.
Okay, thank you for having me on.
You take care and God bless.
Okay, good night.
Good night. And that's our show for today, Friday, May 18th, 2008. On this show, as we do with all our shows, we end by reading the section of the Declaration of Independence that is America's mission statement. This remains where we want to go today. It's up to each of us to ensure we reach the destination. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that to secure these rights, that these rights are a life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that when any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence indeed will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes, and accordingly all experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations pursuing invariably the same object, evidences a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty, to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. This is Melinda Pillsbury Foster, coming to you from BBS Radio. God bless the journey that brings us to freedom, and may God be with you every step of the way. Good night.